Dana Braja Janaran Yashodanandana Braja Janaranjana Naranjana Yamuna Tiravanachari Ravanachari Yamuna Tiravanachari Ravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Madhava Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janavala Bhagiri Varadhari Navala Bhagiri Varadhari Gopi Janavala Bhagiri Varadhari Vala Bhagiri Varadhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Dana Braja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Na Braja Janaranjana Yamuna Tiravanachari Ravanachari Yamuna Tiravanachari Ravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Madhava Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Madhava Kunja Bihari Jayam Vishnupad Paramahamsa Prabhujakacharya Astotra Satyashishi Mad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jayam Vishnupad Paramahamsa Prabhujakacharya Astotra Satyashishi Mad His Divine Grace Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anantakoti Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai. ISKCON BBT Founder Acharya His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakura Ki Jai. Prem se kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyama Kund Radha Kund Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Mayapur Dham Ki Jai, Yamuna Mai Ki Jai, Ganga Mai Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulasi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Dvaita Chandra, Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra, Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Thank you. Today we're reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 24. Explanations of the Atmarama verse, text 11 through 18, sadly none of which have purports or real purports, but we'll go through them. Also, I just wanted to share a little incident. Last year during Kartik, I was here one afternoon in the temple finishing up some rounds. I like it in the temple because I'm a little antisocial. I like it when the temple room's empty in the afternoon to come here and chant sometimes. And some devotees walked in. Yeah, sorry. So some devotees walked in, a couple walked in. The door was closed, the curtain was closed, of course, at that time. And they came in, and you know, the paraphernalia, it was Kartik, so the paraphernalia for lamps were there. And they lit some lamps and they offered it through or to the closed curtain. And my first reaction was, I thought it was a little funny at first. My wife said she'd seen it before. I'd never seen it before. So it was funny at first, but then after 5 seconds of thinking, I thought, oh, this is nice, you know. Krishna's there, they know Krishna's there, and, you know, some piece of cloth isn't blocking, so now we have this. And so I was just remembering that because of the situation now. So, let's see. Also, let's just do the verse because this is the central verse of this, that Atmaramas Chamunayo Nigrantiap Yurukrame Kurvantya Haitukim Bhaktim Itambhuta Gunahari. So we'll go through most of these verses, we'll read them responsively and just go through them, and text 17 we'll do all together. So text 11, Atma Shabde Brahma Deha Mana Yatna Driti Buddhi Swabhava E Satta Artha Prapti The seven different meanings of the word Atma are the absolute truth, the body, the mind, endeavor, firmness, intelligence, and nature. Text 12. Atma deha mana brahma swabhava dritti buddhishu prayatne cha iti. The following are synonyms of the word atma: the body, mind, absolute truth, natural characteristics, firmness, intelligence, and endeavor. This is a quotation from the Vishwa Prakash Dictionary, which I guess is why it's prose and not poetry verse. Text 13. E sate rama ye se atmarama gana. Atmarama ganera age kariba ganana. The word Atmarama refers to one who enjoys these seven items, the absolute truth, body, mind, and so on. Later, I shall enumerate the Atmaramas. Text 14. Muni adi shabdera artha shuna sanatana. Pritak pritak artha pache kariba milana. My dear Sanatan, first hear the meanings of the other words, beginning with the word muni. I shall first explain their separate meanings, then combine them. Text 15. Muni shabde manana shila arakahe moni. Tapasvi vrati yati ararishi muni. The word muni refers to one who is thoughtful, one who is grave or silent, an ascetic, one who keeps great vows, one in the renounced order, and a saint. These are the different meanings of the word muni. Text 16. Nirgranta shabde kahe avidya granti hina. Vidi nisheda veda shastra gyanadi vahina. the word nirgranta refers to one who is liberated from the material knots of ignorance. It also refers to one who is devoid of all regulative principles enjoined in the Vedic literature. It also refers to one who does not have knowledge. Text 17. Murka nicha mlecha adi shastra rikta gana. Dana sanchai nirgranta araye nirdhana. And this one everyone can chant. Anyone? Murka nicha mlecha adi shastra rikta gana. Dana sanchai nirganta araye nirdhana. Murka nicha mlecha adi shastra rikta gana. Dana sanchai nirganta araye nirdhana. Murka nicha mlecha adi shastra rikta gana. Dana sanchai nirganta araye nirdhana. Translation. Nirgranta also refers to one who is illiterate, low-born, misbehaved, unregulated, and devoid of respect for the Vedic literature. The word also refers to one who is a capitalist and to one who has no riches. I picked this verse for the group reading, not entirely at random, but just because it's just a very interesting, you know, counterpoint presenting such a negative definition of nirgranta. And text 18. Nirnischaye niskramarte. Nirnamana nishedayo. Grantodane tasandarbhe. Varna sangratane picha. The prefix ni may be used for a sense of ascertainment, gradation, construction, or forbidding. The word granta means riches, thesis, and composition. And another one-line purport. This is another quotation from the Vishwaprakash Dictionary. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschita Deshatarine. So what I take from all this is that we're expected to, and Srila Prabhupada expected us to study these verses very, very deeply. Mahaprabhu is not just doing some parlor trick of, you know, how many different definitions of different words there are, but this is the means of entering very deeply into the verse and studying it very deeply from every angle of vision. There's a term elsewhere in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, panji tika. Panji means a cotton ball. So, and Prabhupada, when that term comes up, he translates it as fluffing up compressed cotton. So that's what Mahaprabhu is doing by examining every word and its internal meaning and its relation to other words, just like earlier in the verses we read. He said, I'll explain these meanings, separately and together. I'll first explain their separate meanings, then combine them. So this is panji tika, something that's very compressed, and then you fluff it out like a tiny, tiny little ball of cotton compressed. But if you fluff it out, it becomes a big, big thing. So this Prabhupada several times explained this to, you know, to study like this, to fluff it out, to expand it and go deeper into it. Another expression he sometimes used was studying the books threadbare, which I also thought was a very interesting. Oh, before that, the other meaning of panjitika. Panji is not just cotton, but it's actually the mass of cotton that is put on a spinning wheel to spin it into thread. So this is the other idea of panjitika, that you have this mass of cotton which is kind of amorphous and tangled and, you know, sort of inscrutable, but on the spinning wheel it's drawn out fiber by fiber and twisted into thread, something coherent, something useful, something meaningful. So this is some of the ideas of this panjitika, how we're supposed to study, how Mahaprabhu is explaining, how Prabhupada expected us. And like I said, the other phrase he used was to study threadbare. That's also interesting because threadbare is actually a word with kind of a negative connotation. Like if your clothes are threadbare, literally it means like the fabric becomes so worn that like the individual threads start becoming visible and start coming out. Like a nice new piece of cloth, you don't see the threads, you just see the cloth. But when it's threadbare, worn, then you see the individual threads. Or even threadbare has the connotation, like a threadbare idea is something that's even sort of like hackneyed or repeated so many times. But Prabhupada's taking it in a positive way. It means, yes, again and again and again, just like when cloth becomes threadbare, when it's worn again and again, and the threads become visible. So you study these books, these verses, these words, again and again and again until the threads connecting them and all the different meanings become apparent. He said, let's see, this science should be understood. What is God? That you discuss thoroughly, threadbare. Otherwise, how will you be able to preach? And in another place he said, so Srimad Bhagavatam, everything threadbare discussed, very practical and absolute truth. So this is all these meanings of the Atmarama verse. This is what Mahaprabhu is doing. He's studying it threadbare, exposing it for us. And we're also supposed to be invested in this process of studying very deeply and threadbare and dissecting like that. And actually, you could do that with any verse, every word of the Vedic literature. But also this Atmarama verse is particularly ripe and particularly important for this type of analysis, Atmaramas Chamunayo. There's different kinds of Atmaramas who take pleasure in the different kinds of Atma. Munayo, those who are great sages, who are silent, who are ascetics. Nirgranta, those who have transcended the Vedic injunctions, those who are materialists and ignore the Vedic injunctions, those who don't follow, even the fallen people who don't follow the Vedic injunctions, Nirgranta, Apurukrame, all of them are supposed to have a goal, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who performs amazing, wonderful activities. Kurvantya Haitukim Bhaktim, what's that method of all of these types of persons approaching them? Ahaitugi Bhakti, unmotivated, pure devotional service. And then you may ask, well, if they're Atmaramas, if they're already satisfied, why would they be interested in Krishna? Itam Bhuta Ganohari, because the qualities of the Supreme Personality are so amazing that they attract even those who are already satisfied, satisfied in the self or satisfied with their materialistic life. Most of us here before Krishna consciousness, we weren't satisfied in the spirit soul, but we may have been satisfied to some degree with our materialistic life. But when we heard about Krishna, we became attracted. So let's see. So, and that's also why Srila Prabhupada constructed and presented his books the way he did. Devanagari translation, word for word translation, running translation, and elaborate purports. One reason, which he said, was to make so the presentation is seen as authoritative, So intelligent people, scholars, etc., will see that and say, oh, this is a serious presentation. But the other reason is that it's tools for us to dive into it. With the help of that, the word-for-word translation, the Sanskrit. I don't know if there's any Sanskrit scholars here. I am certainly not. But the Sanskrit is there, and we read it, and we all have a familiarity with so many Sanskrit terms, which helps us, you know, understand and dive into these verses. So Prabhupada expected that of us, and that's what Mahaprabhu is doing with these. And Sanskrit especially is favorable to this kind of analysis, because the words do have, we said, like these Vishwa Prakash dictionary references, the words have so many meanings, and so much can be expanded from them, which is why the sutra technique is also so popular in Vedic literatures, that just a few words are there, but so much meaning can be fluffed out of it, so much meaning can be drawn out of it and understood from it. And the danger, the other side of that, of course, is that if someone is not intelligent, or if someone is unscrupulous or ill-motivated, then it also allows drawing so many contrary meanings, incorrect meanings, other meanings that are not really useful or proper. Because that's also part of Sanskrit, just like Mahaprabhu, when he was a young grammar teacher, young arrogant, he posed himself as an arrogant grammar student. Sometimes he would be in a philosophical discussion and he would argue in favor of one particular point. And then he would turn around and argue against the point. And in both cases, he would defeat the opponents. So this is also part of Sanskrit and part of Nyaya and part of grammar. And again, this is the danger that someone who doesn't understand properly, the prime example Prabhupada always gave, often gave, man mana bhava mad bhakto mad yuji mam namaskuru mame vaishyasi yukvaivam atmana mat parayana. That Krishna says so clear, so obvious, you think of me, you surrender to me, you offer your obeisances to me. And the person who Wikipedia calls a scholar and a philosopher, Sarvapalli Radhakrishnan, former president of India. What did he write about that verse? I actually looked it up, his commentary on Bhagavad Gita. It is not the personal Krishna to whom we have to give ourselves up utterly, but the unborn, beginningless, eternal who speaks through Krishna. So, of course, this is nonsense. He's a big scholar. Prabhupada even said that his translations were okay. But his, because his intelligence reached so far beyond, his interpretations reached so far beyond what his intelligence was capable of, he comes up with these contrary definitions. Another example, just like before anyone could approach Mahaprabhu with some composition, some poetry, some drama, some philosophy, they would have to first get through Swarup Damodar, who would test it. And if it wasn't proper, he would ban it, and Mahaprabhu wouldn't have to hear it. And we may know the story. The one devotee had written some drama, and he thought it was very nice, and even he recited it, and even all the devotees, the massive devotees, said, oh, this is so nice, beautiful Sanskrit, glorifying Krishna. But Swarup Damodar, because he was intelligent, he could detect the fault in it, detect the mistake, the misinterpretation, that, oh, you're saying that Lord Jagannath is dull matter, and drawing a distinction between Mahaprabhu and Lord Jagannath. So in this way, he analyzed. So this is the kind of deep analysis we need to distinguish what is what, what's a bona fide proposition, what is not. The other nice example, funny example, is Mahaprabhu's meeting with Vallabha Bhatta. Vallabha, who thought he was very intelligent, was intelligent. He was a great scholar. But what was his conclusion? I've written a Bhagavatam commentary that is so great that it surpasses Sridhar Swami's commentary. And Mahaprabhu said, oh, you're disregarding the Swami? Sridhar Swami said, anyone who disregards the Swami, he's making a nice play on words, because Mahaprabhu is also a scholar and a wordsmith. He said, oh, you're neglecting the Swami? Anyone who neglects the Swami is a prostitute. In that case, taking the double meaning, Swami is Sridhar Swami, and Swami means husband. So a woman who neglects her husband for someone else is a prostitute. So he criticized like that. So this is the danger. Alexander Pope, famous English writer from, I don't know, between 1 and 200 years ago, he wrote, a little learning is a dangerous thing. Drink deep or taste not the Pierian spring. The Pierian spring, not to be confused with the Perrier spring, is a mythological spring in Macedonia where supposedly if you drink the water there, it provides intelligence or artistic inspiration of some kind. So he said, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Drink deep or taste not the Pierian spring. There, shallow draughts intoxicate the brain, but drinking largely sobers us again. So a little Sanskrit knowledge can also be a dangerous thing, that you start interpreting the words in this way and that way. Last time I gave class, I mentioned the anishtata bhakti, the different kinds of unsteadiness in devotional service. I mentioned taranga rangini. So the first one, the first kind of unsteadiness is utsaha mayi. And that means this sort of initial, and the example is given by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. When a Brahmin student starts learning a little bit of philosophy, a little bit of Sanskrit, he learns just a little bit, but he thinks, oh, I'm a big scholar now, I can explain everything. This is utsaha mayi, this overblown enthusiasm for your own intelligence. So this is the danger of learning a little Sanskrit knowledge. But if we dive, so one remedy is, okay, don't learn it. I just, you know, hear it and accept it and don't speculate. And we hear that all the time, don't speculate, which is excellent advice. But on the other hand, the other option is to dive deeply, dive so deeply. Drinking largely sobers us again. So we dive deeply into these verses with intelligence and with a grounded center in devotional service, then we could understand these and interpret them and expand them in ways that are actually fruitful and useful. Not outside the explanations of the acharyas within those explanations, but still there's always new lights to be found. Even by ordinary devotees can find new lights and new explanations. So how do we avoid those improper understandings, those improper explanations? One way is through humility. That unlike like Vallabhabhata, he was proud that, oh, I've made such a great commentary, better than Sridhar Swami. So humility, not thinking that we're more intelligent, that we're more knowledgeable than Srila Prabhupada or more Catholic than the Pope, as they say. Some humility will prevent that. Let's see. Another way is, like I said, being very firmly grounded. That before we would dare to even come up with our own ideas, we're firmly centered, firmly grounded in the actual philosophy as given by Srila Prabhupada, which is why his purports are there. Then we could become very grounded and centered so that we won't become misled. We won't mislead ourselves to different weird philosophical conclusions that are not proper. There's the concept of Paribhasa Sutra, right? We may have heard this. The Paribhasa Sutra is a verse in a larger work through which the whole work is understood through that one verse as a prerequisite for understanding it. Just like at the end of the last chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami, one of his duties he gave him was, you defeat these very foolish ideas. And one of the examples was, oh, that Krishna and Balaram are incarnations of a black and white hair of Vishnu. So he said, you defeat that. So how is that defeated if you have the Paribas Sutra in the Bhagavatam? The Paribas Sutra is Ete Chamsa Kalapumsam Krishnas Tu Bhagavan Swayam. If you understand that, then you won't become misled by foolish ideas that Krishna is an incarnation of a black hair of Mahavishnu. So in a broader sense, if we're centered in proper philosophy, proper understanding, Prabhupada's explanations, if we're centered in that, then with that as a base, as our rootedness, then we won't be misled when we want to dive into these verses deeply and sort of dissect the words and dissect the meanings. We won't become misled, or we won't mislead ourselves. And this is also with this Atmarama verse. You may think, oh my God, there's so many explanations. An Atmarama, is it a spiritual? You can't even say, is an Atmarama a spiritualist or a materialist? Because both are there, right? So this is the, you know, sort of unity and diversity. The conclusion is that all of them, however you define Atmarama, however you define Muni, however you define Nirgranta, the purpose is the same, that they're all meant to surrender to Krishna, because Krishna is all attractive. His qualities are so amazing. Later in this chapter, when this is being discussed, an example is given. He says, I think Mahaprabhu's speaking there, I'm not certain. He said, just like you take the sentence, Sanskrit sentence, asmin vane vriksha palanti, which means the trees in the forest produce fruits. So he explains that just like there's many different trees in the forest, and they're all producing fruits, different fruits, but still the trees in the forest are producing fruits, and they're all producing different fruits, and they're all contributing to the forest ecosystem. So in the same way, there's so many different Atmaramas, but their purpose is the same for all of them. They're all engaged in the performance of devotional service to Krishna. So the Atmaramas, they're self-satisfied. Whatever that conception of self is, they're satisfied. The Munis, they're science. Muni and Mona, same thing, being silent. One time I was going to take up Mona Vrata, but I talked myself out of it. Sorry. But anyway, the Munis, the Nirgrantas, could be someone who's so transcendental that they're not bound by the Vedic injunctions, or it could be a materialist who neglects the Vedic injunctions. So all of them. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur asks, this is in his commentary on the Atmaram verse in the Bhagavatam. He says, can bhakti deliver those who are already liberated? Can the Bhagavatam, a scripture on bhakti, deliver those who have surpassed scriptures? Can a work discussing a server and the served deliver those who have given up all identities of ego? Can the rules of bhakti described in the Bhagavatam deliver those who have given up all rules and prohibitions? To destroy all such protests, this verse says, itam bhutagana. The Lord has such attractive qualities that even the Atmaramas become attracted. So this is the key point, that all the Atmaramas, and who are the Atmaramas? The context of the Atmarama verse in the Bhagavatam originally is Sonika and the sages are hearing about Vyasadeva teaching his son Shukadeva about the Bhagavatam. And he asks, this seems weird, that he's already liberated, he's already self-satisfied. Why would he take the trouble of studying the Bhagavatam? And this verse, and this Matmaram verse is spoken in explanation. And who's the other famous person that the Atmarama verse is referring to? Mrigari. These two persons so beautifully exemplify the diverse meanings. The diverse meanings and at the same time, the unified conclusion of the Atmarama verse. Shukadev, who's liberated, transcendental, incredible personality, and Murghari, who is so degraded, so awful in so many ways, but both of them come to the same conclusion, that becoming attracted to Krishna and serving Krishna and surrendering to Krishna. So this is the beautiful sort of conclusion of the diversity and the unity of the Atmarama verse in these two persons. And that's why, coming up, the description of Murghari the hunter is there to exemplify this. So for everyone, every single person, surrender to Krishna is the all-attractive, all-auspicious path for everyone. So we may ask, what is auspicious? In Nectar of Devotion, the six characteristics of devotional service are mentioned, and the second of them is Shubhada, that devotional service gives all auspiciousness. So Srila Rupa Goswami and Prabhupada in his Nectar of Devotion to some extent explain what all auspicious means. The first characteristic of something being all auspicious is that it benefits everyone, not a particular class, not a particular group, not a particular religion, not a particular nation, but it benefits everyone. Just like, I think I've told this before from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's autobiographical letter to his son. He's describing his youth in his home village. And he said, oh yeah, every year there would be a big Durga Puja. And it was a big, big festival. And everyone had a wonderful time, except for the goats and buffalo. Because of course, so this is materialistically, oh, the people are having a great time, but the goats and buffalo were slaughtered. So devotional service is not like that, that it benefits one group but not another. It benefits everyone. The other characteristic of auspiciousness is that it's all attractive. It benefits everyone, and it's also attractive to everyone. And Prabhupada writes in Nectar of Devotion, describing this, the Krishna consciousness movement, however, is so nice that it can render the highest benefit to the entire human race, so that it benefits everyone. Everyone can be attracted by this movement, and everyone can feel the result. Therefore, Rupa Goswami and other learned scholars agree that a broad propaganda program for the Krishna consciousness movement of devotional service all over the world is the highest humanitarian welfare activity. So Krishna consciousness, devotion to Krishna, is all auspicious because it benefits everyone without distinction, and it's attractive to everyone. Just like, again, eat the Bhuta Gana, that Krishna's qualities are attractive to everyone. And we know Krishna means all attractive. Another quality of all auspiciousness is that it creates good qualities. If something is so-called auspicious, we may think something is beneficial in this world. But if it doesn't create good qualities in the recipient, it's not all auspicious. So of course, Srila Prabhupada and Rupa Goswami quote, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati kinchana sarvayar gunastatra samasati sara harava bhaktasya kato mahadguna mano retena siddhi davito bahi. That the Krishna conscious person develops all the good qualities, even higher than the qualities of the demigods, who are the topmost people in the universe. And without Krishna consciousness, however nice something may be, no good qualities. So that's the third item, that it elevates, it instills good qualities in the person who's receiving this auspicious thing. And the final item is that devotional service or auspiciousness must provide the greatest happiness, not some meager happiness, not some temporary happiness, not some artificial happiness. Another story, which I've told before, when Prabhupada was having a mock argument with one of his devotees, about is there happiness in this world? And the devotees was arguing, yes, of course there's happiness in this world. Everyone says there's happiness in this world. And Prabhupada's reply was, not everyone, I don't say. And the devotee said, oh, but you're the only one. And Prabhupada said, yes, that is because I am the only intelligent man. So it must give this superior happiness, this Brahma Sokyam Twanantam, for something to be auspicious. And Prabhupada and Srila Rupa Goswami quote Narada Pancharatra, Hari Bhakti Mahadevya Sarva Muktiadi Siddhaya Bhuktyas Chadbhutas Tasyas Cheti Kavad Anuvrata. So Hari Bhakti Mahadevya Sarva Muktiadi Siddhaya, that Sarva Muktiadi, all kinds of liberation, Siddhaya, all kinds of mystic perfections. And what to speak of Bhuktyas Chadbhutas Tasyas, Bhuktya, what to speak of ordinary material happiness. All of these items, liberation, mystic powers, material happiness, are like fearful maidservants bowing at the feet of devotional service to Lord Hari. So a devotee who, so devotional service qualifies as the only all auspicious item, because it gives the topmost happiness, the most perfect happiness, happiness which surpasses liberation and surpasses material enjoyment, as described in the under Shubhada. Also a happiness which moksha laguta krit, which mocks, which destroys the so-called happiness of liberation. And happiness, sanjananda visheshatma, a happiness which is so intense, so perfect, so thick and engrossing that you can't even perceive the so-called happiness of sense gratification, liberation, mystic cities. They don't even exist. You can't even perceive them. So this is devotional service. And those who are Atmaramas of whatever stage, when they become entranced, when we become entranced by Krishna's qualities, who's so all attractive, we have to do our part. We have to surrender. We have to follow regulative principles. We have to study, again, deeply, as Prabhupada wanted, very deeply, analyzing these verses, studying them threadbare, and extracting all the juice that we can from them, with Srila Prabhupada's help. We have to do ourselves, but really the point is that Krishna is so all attractive that if we just open ourselves to that, open our actual nature as spirit soul to that, then automatically is not the right word, but it's sort of the right word. Automatically we'll go back to Krishna by opening ourselves to that. Thank you very much for your very kind attention. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. If there's any questions or comments, we can discuss now.
Thank you for a wonderful Hare Krishna class. So Krishna consciousness is good for everyone. So we can only preach at the level we are at. We can't see the effect on another person. So how are we encouraged by this when it's good for everyone, but we can't see it? Because we have to cut through all this type of, layers.
Yeah. To a certain degree, it's faith, reasonable faith. It's also based on past experience, that just like we're going to hear about the history of Murghari. So you'd say, oh, if Murghari can, hear it and take part in it and become elevated by it, why not the, little baby Murghari's, running all over the world? And of course, that was Narada Muni's preaching. We're not Narada Muni, but we do what we can. I remember one time Satsarup Maharaj was asking a similar question to Prabhupada. He was saying, I don't really feel qualified to preach or to go back to Godhead, but I don't feel qualified to go back to Godhead, but I'm going out and I'm preaching to people to go back to Godhead. And Prabhupada said, no, that's okay. But at the same time, it's not that we're like an export business, that we're staying here rotting and we're sending everyone else back to Godhead. So we gradually become qualified and we inspire other people to become qualified. There's another place Prabhupada said, talking about the saving a drowning man. So he said, if you can't swim, then if you go try to save a drowning man, he'll just drag you down. So you have to become at least some degree qualified in swimming, then you could save a drowning man. So he said, you become qualified, and then you could save someone. And then he said, or you could do both at the same time. As you're becoming qualified, you're preaching. As you become qualified, you're saving others. So it's a balance, you know, how advanced are we? What is our ability to preach, our potency to preach? But it's the order of the spiritual master. We heard Prabhupada in the Nectar Devotion that the acharyas have decided that this is the best welfare work. So even if we're not the best preachers of it, we do what we can. And, you know, we limp along and as we gain strength, our preaching can be more valuable, more potent. And even if we're not potent and we can't deliver anyone, Krishna will see us trying and we'll at least get that much benefit from it, which is a lot. Is that helpful?
Yes, I'm just thinking that we ourselves have become qualified by falling in good sadhana. And if we don't do this, then our preaching can, you know. I mean, like, what I'm thinking is, like, when Prabhupada first came here, we were not qualified, but he preached. And now we're remembering things like Prabhupada said with a deeper understanding. So we do become purified. Yeah. But for ourselves, like when we're chanting japa or reading the books and something like this, we have to go deeper and deeper and deeper. And in order to do that, we just, everything helps one another, the chanting, the reading, the everything. So if we neglect one or the other, we're just hampering ourselves. Is that what you're saying?
Sort of, but what you're saying is correct and nice. Yeah, we don't set, all the processes are going on together and feeding each other and enriching each other. And we're diving, you know, as deep as we can and doing what we can. It's like Krishna Das Kaviraj said, the pastimes of Mahaprabhu are like a deep ocean and everyone can swim in it according to their ability. So according to our ability, we dive deeply, shallowly, or whatever we can do. Some of us are in the, you know, in the wading pool, like the babies in the wading pool, and some are, you know, the deep sea divers, but we're all doing to one degree or another. Thank you.
In one way, the process is so mysterious because you're reading the same books, you're hearing the same philosophy, but it's so much more understanding comes with it. It's like so mysterious, you know, like,
yeah.
I can understand this process where you see you're fluffing the cotton,
yeah.
You know, and then the other side where you're taking the thing and making a thread. It's incredible.
Yeah. Actually, that reminds me of something that His Grace Ravindra Swarup Prabhu told me. Actually, I got a lot of really good instructions from Ravindra Swarup Prabhu about how to study and studying. But he told me a story from his own life when he was in university. He was writing a paper. I don't know if it was his doctoral thesis or just some paper he was writing about a book by some famous at that time philosopher. And he read the book, and he didn't understand it. And a big book, fat book, he read it 3 times, and then he thought he had an understanding of what the philosopher was trying to say. So in those days, no email. So he wrote a snail mail letter to the author of that philosophy book and said, I read your book, I studied it, and my conclusion, you're trying to say, you know, XYZ. And he got a letter back from that person who's saying, you are the first person who's actually understood what I was trying to say in this book. So we reread, just like, you know, if you're preparing for class, you read these verses 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, times, and each time you read it, you're, you know, it's like another, you know, tap of the hammer against the rock, you know, getting more and more understanding. And in our life, we read a book, we start a new book, and we go back to book we've read. So individual verses we can read and reread, and we go back to the books, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, reading through again. And this is the unpacking, this is the fluffing out that's going on, whether you're studying one verse or whether you're, you know, over the course of your life.
How did he tell you to study? To read it over and over again?
That's one thing we could do.
Yeah. You said that Mr. Rupuru told you how to study, gave you some pointers. So.
What else did he, I'm trying to think what else he's. He, you know, told me, one thing he told me, this is, you know, exposing myself as not advanced. We were once discussing an author, Umberto Eco. I don't even remember how he got on the topic. He's a favorite author of mine, Italian author, and he was explaining to me how, you know, some devotees met with him in Italy and telling the story of it. And we started discussing some of his writings. And after a while he said, Acharya, if you had better really study Srila Prabhupada's books a lot, because if you don't, you're gonna get lost in these conundrums of literature and philosophy and stuff like that. So he cautioned me about getting lost in these mundane philosophies, and to take that desire, that interest in, you know, depth and study and dissecting things and apply it to Prabhupada's books. He also told me not to just take the verses in isolation, but to see how ideas are developing in the Bhagavatam, going from one verse to another, how the different ideas are developed and how the different philosophy is coming out gradually. So those are a few of the things he told me. I can't remember everything right now. But anything else, question or comment? No question or comment? No? Okay, thank you very much, everybody, for your very kind attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Vanchakalpa Thirubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya.